Hello, welcome to Science TLDR. Today, we're diving deep into cognitive genetics. Specifically, we're looking at a paper trying to do something pretty ambitious, isolating a very specialized genetic factor. The paper's called A Genetic Common Factor Underlying Self-Reported Math Ability and Highest Math Class Taken. And you can find it in Molecular Psychiatry.
Yeah, and this deep dive, it's important because it really goes after a long-standing issue in the field, doesn't it? Moving past just general intelligence, or G.
Right. G has been dominant for so long.
Totally. But we know there's more to it. These specialized abilities, psychometricians call them group factors. And this study, its whole mission was to pin down the genetic bits specific to quantitative ability, GQ, you know, and crucially to make sure that genetic signal was truly separate from G.
That's the real challenge, isn't it? Because, I mean, any decent math test is also a fantastic measure of G.
Exactly.
But, like the sources point out, quantitative skill does add something extra, predicting things like success in STEM fields, even after accounting for general smarts.
And we had clues already, right? From twin studies suggesting math achievement had some unique genetic influences beyond just G.
So this study is trying to find the actual molecular basis for that uniqueness.
Precisely. And to do that, they needed huge numbers, really huge, which meant using phenotypes already collected in these massive cohorts.
Okay, what did they use?
Two main things. Self-reported math ability that was over 500,000 people.
Wow.
And the highest level of math class taken that was over 430,000.
Okay, hold on a second. Self-reported ability and course selection. Isn't that a bit problematic right from the start? I mean, those things reflect more than just raw math talent, right? Like motivation, interest, maybe even just the opportunity someone had.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fair point, and the authors definitely acknowledge it. It's the classic GWAS trade-off, isn't it?
Yeah.
You lose some phenotypic purity, maybe, but you gain enormous statistical power from the sample size. But here's the key bit. Even with those potential confounds, those two indicators are very strongly correlated genetically. The RG was 0.84.
Okay, so genetically they're measuring something similar.
Right. And maybe more importantly, both are also strongly linked genetically to general cognitive performance, CPRG over 0.6, and educational attainment, EARG, around 0.78.
Ah, so if they just run a standard GWAS on, say, self-reported math ability,
they'd basically just find the genes for general intelligence or maybe being good at school overall, stuff we largely already know.
Which makes the methodology absolutely central here.
Exactly. That's the hero of the story. To isolate that unique math signal, that quantitative flavor, separate from just being a good student or smart overall, they use genomic structural equation modeling, genomic SEM.
Okay, let's unpack that, genomic ISM.
Yeah, it lets you apply techniques like factor analysis directly to the genetic data itself, specifically the genetic covariance matrix.
So the real innovation was how they set up the model.
Yes. The core idea was a structural constraint. They defined a latent quantitative factor, let's call it GQ, and they deliberately forced it to be orthogonal.
Meaning genetically uncorrelated.
Exactly. Uncorrelated with both G and also with those non-cognitive skills like persistence or conscientiousness that help with general educational attainment.
Okay, so it's like a genetic filtering process. Find what's common to the math indicators, then mathematically subtract out the genetic overlap with being generally smart or generally studious.
You got it. And what's left is, hopefully, the unique genetic signature for quantitative reasoning. Then they ran the GWAS on that specific filtered factor.
And did it work? Did they find a signal?
They did. The analysis pinpointed 53 SMPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms associated with this latent quantitative factor.
And the quality checks, any red flags like population stratification?
Nope. Looked really clean. The LBSC intercept was basically perfect, 0.99. Which means we can be pretty confident the signal isn't just an artifact of pooling diverse data sets. It suggests negligible confounding from population structure. It's a solid genetic finding.
Okay, that's impressive. And the model itself, did it reveal anything interesting beyond just the main SNPs? Like, did it help clean up the signal?
It actually did. It immediately flagged one particular SNP as an outlier. It's RS13173325, a missense variant in a gene called SLC39A8. This one's known to be highly pleiotropic, affecting many traits.
What was weird about it in this context?
It showed significant what they call QSMP heterogeneity,
meaning
its effect wasn't consistent with acting just through that latent quantitative factor.
Yeah.
In simple terms, its association with self-reported math ability was positive, but its link to highest math class was negative.
Ah, so it was pulling in different directions on the two input variables.
Exactly. The model basically said, hold on, this SMP's influence is messy. It doesn't fit the profile of contributing cleanly to specialized quantitative ability. It must be doing something else too.
So the sub-approach helped filter out potentially confusing signals that a simpler GWAS might have missed.
Precisely. It demonstrates the power of modeling the relationships between traits at the genetic level.
Okay, so they've defined this specialized factor genetically. The next big question is, what's the biology? Where in the body or brain is this happening?
Let's get into that biological annotation. First stop, tissues.
Right. Where does the genetic heritability seem to be concentrated?
They use stratified LD score regression for this.
Mm.
And the results were, well, pretty striking. All top 13 tissues showing enrichment were in the central nervous system.
No surprise there, I guess.
Not entirely surprising, no.
Yeah.
But the really interesting part was which CNS tissues stood out. Only two cleared the benchmark for significant enrichment. The cerebellar hemisphere.
The cerebellum, interesting. Often linked to motor control, but increasingly cognitive functions too.
Exactly. And the other one, the amygdala.
The amygdala. That's usually associated with emotion, fear, memory, not complex math. How does that fit?
Well, that's where findings like these push us to rethink. You know, maybe the amygdala's role here relates to managing the focus or the emotional regulation or even the cognitive persistence needed for difficult abstract thought. It suggests quantitative skill isn't purely a cortical thing. The cerebellum's role could tie into sequence learning or prediction, which are definitely relevant to math.
Fascinating. So beyond tissues, what about specific biological pathways or functions? Did the gene set analyses point anywhere specific?
Oh, yeah. They use PAPI-S polygenic priority score for gene prioritization and enrichment. And the top hit was really clear.
What was it?
Regulation of neuron projection development. A big 8.4-fold enrichment.
Neuron projection development. So how neurons grow their axons and dendrites, how they wire up?
That's exactly it. It points towards the brain's connectivity, how the wiring diagram gets built and maybe refined.
Were there specific genes backing this up?
Yes. They highlighted examples like SEMA6D and EFNA5, which are known players in axon guidance. So it really seems less about the static number of neurons and more about how they connect dynamically.
And this connectivity theme, did it show up in other analyses?
It did. Broader analyses kept highlighting synaptic function. Things like dendrite, presynaptic membrane, the whole synapse part cluster came up top.
So not just the long-range wiring, but the actual connection points, the synapses.
Right. And even more specific chemically, the glutamate receptor activity cluster was highly ranked, mentioning genes like GRM8, and NGEF.
Glutamate, the main excitatory neurotransmitter.
Exactly, suggesting that the efficiency and precision of that fast excitatory signaling at the synapse is really crucial for this specialized quantitative factor.
Okay, this is where it connects back to G in a really interesting way. We know general intelligence, G, and also educational attainment, EAA, tend to correlate positively with overall brain volume.
Robustly so, yes. Bigger brains tend to correlate with higher G and EA scores, genetically speaking.
So what about this specialized quantitative factor? Does it also track with brain size?
And here's probably the most striking finding, conceptually. No, the genetic correlation between this GQ factor and overall brain volume was near zero.
Wow, zero correlation.
Essentially zero. No significant genetic overlap.
So let's think about what that implies. General intelligence might be partly about sheer processing capacity, more neurons, bigger volume.
Mm-hmm.
But this specialized quantitative ability, it doesn't seem to depend on volume.
It seems to be much more about the quality and efficiency of the connections, how well those neuron projections are guided, how effectively those glutamate synapses are operating. It's the network sophistication, perhaps, not its sheer size.
That's a major distinction. It suggests different genetic architectures underpinning general versus specific abilities, quality of wiring versus quantity of hardware, maybe.
That's a good way to put it. It really challenges simpler models where specialized skills just scale up with general cognitive resources.
Okay, that biological picture is compelling. But let's circle back to the real world. Did the factor actually behave as expected? Did it show that separation from general ability in terms of outcomes? How is the discriminant validity?
It held up really well. First off, remember, they designed it to be orthogonal to general scholastic success. Well, it was. The genetic correlation with the main component of school grades reflecting overall performance was effectively zero, minus 0.02.
So check one for orthogonality, but what about subject-specific stuff?
Ah, that's where it gets sharp. They looked at the second principal component of school grades, E2. This E2 axis basically captures the difference between how well someone does in language versus math.
Right, sort of a verbal versus quantitative tilt.
Exactly. And the GQ factor had a strong negative correlation with this E2 axis. RG equals minus 0.80.
A negative correlation means?
It means a higher genetic loading for this quantitative factor is strongly associated with doing much better in math relative to language arts. It really nails that specialization.
Okay, makes sense. Does this specialization carry over into careers?
It does, quite specifically. Strong positive genetic correlations with being a mathematician.
Okay.
Dot RG of 0.31. And also with being a software engineer or programmer, RG 0.38.
So clear links to highly quantitative professions.
Yes. And just as importantly, look at where the correlations weren't significant. No strong genetic links to being a university professor in general, or a medical doctor, or a life scientist.
Interesting. So it's not just smart professional, it's specifically coding and math-heavy roles.
That's what the genetic data suggests, yeah. Very targeted.
And on the flip side, did it correlate negatively with more verbal-type careers?
It did. Echoing that negative E2 correlation, there were negative genetic correlations with roles like writer or poet, NGO or union organizer or journalist, roles arguably defined more by verbal communication or persuasion.
So the genetic architecture seems to push towards one cognitive style over the other, at least in terms of these broad vocational categories.
Seems like it. Then they looked at psychiatric and behavioral traits.
Yeah.
Generally a protective profile, negative genetic correlations with internalizing stuff, neuroticism, major depression, also negative for the general externalizing factor. And interestingly, a negative correlation with autism spectrum disorder, RG minus 0.20.
Okay. Any positive links?
One small but significant positive correlation popped up. Schizophrenia at RG equals 0.07.
Okay. Small, but there.
Yeah. Needs more investigation, obviously.
So final piece, prediction. They generated a polygenic score, a PGS, from these 53 SMPs. Could it actually predict math skills in a completely different group of people?
They tested this in the Minnesota Twin Family Study, a holdout sample. And yes, the PGS derived from this GQ factor did predict scores on the Rett arithmetic test.
How strongly?
Modestly, but significantly. It explained about 0.39% of the variance, delta R squared.
Okay, so it works out of sample. But the crucial test, again, is specificity, right? Did it only predict math?
That's the key. And yes, it showed excellent discriminative validity. The PGS had basically zero predictive power for reading or spelling achievement in the same sample.
Nice. Specific to arithmetic.
And they took it one step further. To rule out confounding, like maybe smart parents pass on general ability genes and provide a math-rich home environment, they did a within-family analysis.
Using parental PGS.
Right, controlling for the parents' genetic scores. And the specific association between the individual's GQ-PGS and their arithmetic score held up.
Which strengthens the case that this PGS is capturing something about the individual's direct genetic propensity for quantitative skill, not just family background.
Exactly. It suggests less confounding bias.
Okay, so putting it all together, it seems like a successful proof of concept for isolating a specialized cognitive factor. But you mentioned trade-offs earlier. What are the main limitations we should keep in mind?
The big one, which the authors are upfront about, stems from using only two indicators, self-reported ability and highest class. To make the factor model work mathematically, to make it identifiable, they had to make a strong assumption. They had to fix the residual genetic variances for those two indicators to zero. Basically, assuming all the genetic influence on those measures operates only through the common factors, GQG, non-cog.
And the likely effect of that assumption?
It probably distorts the relative sizes of the factor loadings a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So while we can be pretty confident about which SMPs are involved in the overall concept of the orthogonal factor, the precise weighting or importance of GQ versus G in influencing those initial indicators might be slightly off. We need more and maybe better indicators in future studies to get those loadings perfect.
Got it. A necessary simplification for this first step, but something to refine later. Okay, let's wrap up. If you had to boil this whole deep dive down, what are the three biggest takeaways?
Okay, takeaway one. Using some pretty sophisticated modeling, genomic SEM, they successfully isolated a latent genetic factor for quantitative ability that's independent of general intelligence, G. This factor is linked to 53 SNPs, and its genetic influence seems concentrated in CNS tissues, particularly the cerebellum and amygdala.
Takeaway two. This factor shows remarkable specificity in the real world. It's genetically linked strongly and positively to math and coding jobs, but negatively to the school performance axis comparing math versus language, and also negatively to verbal-centric careers. Really high discriminant validity.
And takeaway three, the biology points strongly towards brain connectivity, not brain size. Things like neuron projection development, synaptic function, glutamate signaling seem key. This fits perfectly with the near-zero genetic correlation with brain volume, suggesting specialized ability is more about the quality of the wiring than the overall amount of brain tissue.
That last point, the wiring over volume, really sticks with me. It makes you wonder about the future, doesn't it? If these specialized abilities are more about dynamic connectivity, maybe hunting for them using broad GDOE ways on things like educational attainment isn't the endpoint.
What are you thinking?
Well, maybe the future involves developing really targeted, maybe even gamified, high-throughput tests, things that can specifically measure the efficiency of these underlying neural processes, that dynamic connectivity, much more directly than asking someone what math class they took.
Yeah, moving beyond proxy measures towards assays of the specific cognitive operations themselves, that can be a whole new direction for phenotyping these specialized skills. It's definitely moving from just understanding the general engine to really dissecting the specialized gearboxes.
A fascinating prospect.